It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. I am Kim Munson. Hope you are doing well on this snowy morning. Producer Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Actually, I'm prepared, I guess, is the best way to say it. But here, I'm ready now.
Well, that's good. That's good. So welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we're going to have some very important conversations. I'm thrilled to have in studio with me Richard Holt. Richard, you are running for Centennial City Council.
Indeed, I am.
So we'll talk with you about that in the second segment, but it's great to have you here.
Good to be here.
Third and fourth segment, we'll be talking with Ben Martin regarding the Federalist Papers and the executive branch. You know, there's a lot of talk about the executive branch these days, and it is our Federalist Papers show brought to you by the Harris family, and that will indeed be very informative as well. So let's see. Let's jump in here. As we talk about things, we talk about them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And if something is a really good idea, it seems like you don't need to use force because people would want to do that. And that brings up a subject, Steve. Okay, it's very snowy. I had looked at my phone. I don't watch much TV these days, so I looked at the weather.
You're not missing anything, but go ahead, the weather.
Okay, so they had said, weather people had said that we were going to have 4 days of snow. Then yesterday afternoon, the sun was shining. Then this morning, the snow was not supposed to start until 9 a.m., but it's snowing out there now. Okay, my question, I'm going to ask Jason McBride this too.
Oh, boy.
Okay, is if we can't figure out exactly when the snow is coming in, when the sun is going to shine, how the heck do we think that we will know what the temperature is going to be in 100 years?
Good one.
What do you think about that?
Well, it's a question of the ages, I guess, but, you know, I dare not ask you, how old are you anyway? But still,
No, I cannot ask me.
But you've been around, and in terms of, as have I. Okay, let me step into this a little deeper here. We all know accuracy, although it has improved greatly in the last 25 years, there's still some things about forecasting weather that, you know, I flat out heard somebody say, boy, we really blew this one yesterday. When it cleared up
right
as early as it did, it's like, right. Well, wait, this wasn't the way it was supposed to go.
So we are betting a complete economy, a complete world economy on quote-unquote climate change.
And we are.
We can't even figure out what the weather's going to do the next day.
We are. But you know this one, too. This is vote buying. This is, you know, striking the chord with certain segment of the population that says, you know, this is something that I truly believe in, and you get their vote. Irregardless of, you know, where the science is really at. And, you know, it's nothing new. It's a new flavor of it, but it's nothing new.
Well, and the stories that we've been telling our kids, you know, regarding this, you see that young woman, Greta Thunberg or whatever. I mean, she truly, truly believes, I think, that the world is going to end in, you know, certain amount of years. And it's just really a shame. And so I just had to make a snarky comment. If we can't figure out exactly what the weather's going to do the next day, how the heck can we really know what the temperature's going to be in 100 years?
Point very well taken.
Okay, thank you. And we continue to see the socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, and data. We need to bring freedom back to these issues instead of force. And even with that comment, Steve, I'm going to say thank you. So thank you to you. And that is just, that's all I'm going to say. Thank you to Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for your support. And thank you to each of you listeners. You are treasured. You're valued. I really love hearing from you. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And that is my website as well, kimmunson.com. All kinds of great information there. My voter's guide is there. I am recommending a no on CC, a no on DD, and any issue that you see, whether it's a school district or county or wherever, if it starts with the words without raising taxes, that means that they are basically trying to get around Tabor, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. I recommend a no vote on that as well. So be sure and check that out. Oh, so exciting. This No Safe Spaces movie. It's going to be on at the Highlands Ranch AMC Theaters Friday. It looks like ticket sales are going well. Go to nosafespaces.com to sign up. Adam Carolla and Dennis Prager are starring in this. And they mentioned there's a difference between liberals and leftists. And many liberals are very concerned about the lack of diversity of ideas on college campuses. And college campuses are among the most dangerous places in America for free thought, free speech, and free expression. But, Steve, I feel the pendulum is swinging back from the far-left radical movement. People are going, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. So every day we need to do something to preserve this great American idea. We have Richard Holt in studio, who is running for city council in Centennial. And, Richard, these are some of the most important races out there. And I really encourage everybody to step forward every day to do something to preserve this American idea. And what you are doing is really awesome. So I can't wait to talk with you in the second segment on that. But go to nosafespaces.com to get your tickets. I'm going to go to the 7 p.m. show on Friday. Steve, have you gotten your tickets?
No, ma'am. There's so many things going on and in my head, and there's limited resources there. This CPU is an older model CPU, and I need a specific reminder. I need to put my wife on it.
Then it'll get done.
That'll get the job done.
Then it will get done. That is for sure. So let's see. I'm looking for one other thing, Steve. I may have to do this in the second segment because I can't find something that I was going to do. Okay. So going on into here, recommending a no vote on Prop CC. And if you need a reason to vote no on Prop CC, we have hundreds of millions of reasons, all related to corporate welfare. If the state needs more money, why are tax incentives, credits, grants, et cetera, given to corporations? According to Good Jobs First Colorado Tracker, Redwood Trust, Inc. in Douglas County, which is a California-based mortgage lending company with a market cap of $1.87 billion, in 2013 was offered a job growth tax credit from the Economic Development Commission in the amount of a little over $5 million. The grand total for the past 12 working days, we've been highlighting one corporation a day, all offers accepted by corporations given subsidies by Colorado state agencies is $233 million. Please note that Redwood Trust, Inc. and the other companies we're discussing are successful companies. Our point is that these companies do not need government money to maintain their success. We believe that the free market should stand alone without any government interference, and it is better to cut taxes across the board without any preferential treatment for chosen companies that allows the government to pick winners and losers. And the question on the table is, why is it that the state of Colorado is coming to hardworking, everyday people saying in Proposition CC, the question is, give us your Tabor tax refunds forever. We don't ever want to have to ask you if we have to give your refunds back to you. And Tabor has, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights has three things in it. One, if you're going to increase taxes, if you're going to incur debt that we have to pay off, or if you're going to keep revenues above a very generous formula for government to grow of inflation plus population. Anything above that, Tabor says you just have to ask us if you want to keep those refunds. And what Prop CC is doing is they're saying, we want to keep the change and we don't want to ask you again. So I think the point's well taken, Steve. Have I nailed that one today?
You have, and we want to keep nailing it all the way up through the day of the election.
Right.
What we were saying, you and I had this discussion last week, is the ironclad wording of some of these things that are coming from the Capitol, since the current administration moved in. And the forever nature of CC is what I find most kind of galling. It's like, let's just shut this door completely and we won't even consider it again.
Right. And so we may want to speak for ourselves, but I think there's something that's really not good about speaking for our children and our grandchildren. And so it's going to be nip and tuck, my friends. People are asking me what it looks like. And the polling on it, from my understanding, is it is just nip and tuck. So what that means is you need to make sure that you vote and you need to make sure that you encourage everybody else to vote, because those that vote are the ones that actually control the decisions. So you need to make sure you get off your duff and vote. So our inspiration for today, since we're going to be talking with Ben Martin about the Federalist Papers in the third and fourth segment, I went to one of the authors of the Federalist Papers, John Jay. He was an American statesman, patriot, diplomat, founding father of the United States, negotiator, and did you know this, Steve? A signatory of the Treaty of Paris of 1783. I bet you knew that, right?
No, I did not.
He was the second governor of New York and the first Chief Justice of the United States. And he was also one of the authors of the Federalist Papers. And he says, those who own the country ought to govern it. So that's the people. The people, those that own the country ought to govern it.
Again, I stand amazed at words that were spoken so long ago and their connection to what's going on today.
I know.
So, incredibly wise people.
Incredibly wise people, for sure.
They didn't have the internet dumbing them down.
No, they did not have the internet dumbing them down. So, speaking of, I've got some funnies for you. These are quotes, okay? Are you ready?
Now, remember, Richard, she said funnies. That's the operative word.
Okay, and these are different quotes by different people. So, do you remember Marion Barry? He was the mayor of Washington, D.C.
Oh, yes, I do.
His quote is, outside of the killings, Washington has one of the lowest crime rates in the country. Okay? Number two, this is by Will Rogers, comedian, social commentator, vaudeville actor. He says, I don't make jokes. I just watch the government and report the facts.
Yes.
Okay. And lastly, Larry Hardiman says, the word politics is derived from the word poly, meaning many, and ticks, which means blood-sucking parasites.
Good.
There you have it.
Very good. Okay, funny.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. I hit it today. So, you know what? Let's go to break early because I had a piece of paper that I thought was right in front of me, and I can't find it, so I'm going to look for that during break. We're going to come back. Hopefully, I'll have that, and then we'll talk with Richard Holt, who is running for Centennial City Council. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Hey, welcome back. I am Kim Munson, and this is the Kim Munson Show. We've got a great show planned for you on this very snowy morning. In studio is Richard Holt, who's running for city council in Centennial. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking with Ben Martin in the third and fourth segment regarding our Federalist Paper Show, which is brought to you by the Harris family. Greatly appreciate that. But, you know, one of the things that I have been doing is when I was on city council in Lone Tree back in 2012 to 2016, about 2015, I heard about this group called Building a Better Colorado, and that they were having these conversations across the state. And the nonpartisan, not taking a stand on issues. But as I really looked at it, it didn't seem like what they were saying and what they were doing were actually the same thing. They indicated they were having conversations with people wanting to know what they had to say. But yet the conversations, they were using the Delphi technique, where they can actually take a room and move them towards a predetermined decision, all the while making people think that they are giving a voice to this particular issue. And so they're back, Building a Better Colorado. Dan Ritchie is the guy that's really behind that. And he's put $1 million into the trying to get CC passed, as well as Pat Stryker up in Fort Collins has given $500,000. And then there's a lot of money coming in from out of state. And so that just on that alone, I think you should vote no on that. But anyway, this Building a Better Colorado meeting that I went to was over at AMG National Trust Bank. And Earl Wright is the chairman of the board and the co-founder. And I wrote to him. I said, I'm very concerned because I know that you are someone who really cares about the American idea, cares about Colorado. And if Tabor, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, goes away, it really takes away, I think, the ability for everyday people to kind of keep a check on how fast government grows and what they do exactly. And he said, well, Kim, I'm not involved with that organization. And I said, well, it was at your bank. And so it looks like you are approving that organization. He said, we rent that room to so many different people. And I said, do you mind giving me a statement on that? So this is the statement. He said, AMG National Trust Bank offers the Dome, which is their community room, to our clients, 501c3 organizations, and the public. Its predominant use is for unique economic and investment insights, presentations for our clients, which are also video communicated nationally. There are fees associated with the use of the Dome area, and hours of usage are limited to fit with our business hours. Many organizations reporting on and advocating for specific public policies use the Dome for public presentations. This is not an endorsement by AMG or its management. And Steve, I thought that was important to get that out, and I really appreciate Earl Wright clarifying that, because it looked initially to me like implicitly it was a rubber approval of that. And so it's I really appreciate his clarification on that. Steve, does that help you?
It does, and I'm glad you reached out to him, and I'm so glad he responded as he did.
Yes, most definitely. So, okay, let's jump into here. We've got Richard Holt in studio. Richard, you are running for city council, and I really think that city council, a school board, county commissioner, these are among some of the most important races in our country. So tell me a little bit about you and why you are stepping up to run for city council.
Well, very good. Thank you, Kim. Well, my name is Richard Holt, and I am running for Centennial City Council in District 3. And just a number of reasons for doing it. I mean, the base is I love Centennial. I love what they're doing. I love how they're doing it. And I just want to be a good shepherd as far as, helping the city in the next, 4 years or so. For me personally, I've always been involved with politics, just very tangentially, just kind of dipping the toe in, taking the toe out. And but just right place, right time. I'm an empty nester, and just had the chance to dive into it, and very glad I'm doing it. It's been a phenomenal experience. I'm not a politician by trade. I'm an IT guy for the last 25 years.
Love it.
And I've lived in the same house in Fox Ridge for nearly 20, and have raised two phenomenal kids with my wife Julie, and just like I said, right time, right place, and the experience has been phenomenal. The amount of people that I've met, gotten to listen to different opinions, and it was just a really good thing to do. So very happy I'm doing this.
Okay, now how can people get more information about you, Richard?
Very good. Well, my website is Holt for Centennial, HOLTFOR Centennial .com. I have a Facebook page, Holt for Centennial, and there you have it.
Okay, and tell me a little bit about you. Where did you grow up, and how did you get to Colorado or to Centennial? I'm assuming you are not a native, but maybe you are. So tell me about that.
Kind of a grandfathered in native. So I've been here for about 25 years. I grew up in Southern California, and went to school in Northern California, and just found a place. I have some cousins in Fort Collins. Went there for summers, and figured out, before I grew up, I'll check out Denver, and that's been 25 years, and here I am.
Okay, and tell me about the campaign trail. How's that been?
It definitely puts you out of your comfort zone. Just pounding the pavement. I've tracked this. I have literally had taken 250,000 steps in this whole thing, going
really?
From door to door, just meeting the people. I've talked to over 1,000 people, and just got to hear all sorts of opinions and facts and just where people are with things. So it's just a really good experience, like I said.
Now, some of the things in politics that they say is that it's important that you have a contrast with with your opponent. So how would you say that you can contrast yourself from your opponent or opponents? How many other people are running for this seat?
We've got one other person running for the district, and she is also a registered Republican as well.
Okay.
The contrasting is I'm not a professional politician. I'm fairly new to the game, so bring a fresh perspective. I think what I bring as an IT guy actually helps a lot as well. And so dealing with the technology, and Centennial is really well set as far as the technology is concerned. We have three rings of fiber that stretch for 50 miles, and just how to use this, and with newer technologies coming in and growth and traffic, and how to fold those in and get a good get an overall approach to how to smartly grow this city.
And that seems to be, some of the questions that are really out there. I know that, and this may not be something that you're looking at yet, but, there's been a lot of questions about rezoning of different, pieces of land throughout the Front Range. Is that something that you've looked at all yet? Or
I've started to look into it. The more I dive into this campaign and knowing how the city runs and city operates, along with the issues that they're going to have, and growth is definitely going to be one of them. I know that you've had Ron Phelps on before, with South Glen. In my district, we have something called the Jones District, the space between the light rail station at Dry Creek and IKEA. Huge tract of land. And there's plans to develop it, and pretty substantial as well. And so just working with the city to come to some sort of smart growth with this. And there's also going to be another large development just a little bit south of Centennial called King's Point, if I'm not mistaken. And so the zoning and how the city approaches that, I'm still on a learning curve with that. But I know that we're growing. Centennial is over 80% developed, and so what do you do with the rest of the land?
And that's what's so tricky. And I'm still working on getting my brain around that. We've done a lot of shows with Randall O'Toole, who is with the Cato Institute. He's an expert in urban planning and transportation, and how to match that up with property rights. That I think that is really one of the most important things that a city council person has to work on. And so that's something that I think we need to work, we need to continue to have that conversation about that, because that is one of the most important issues out there. So we're going to go to Jason McBride here in just a little bit. But what's kind of the final thought that you would like to leave with my listeners about, why you, your campaign, and again, how people can reach you?
Very good. Well, again, my name is Richard Holt, Centennial Council, City Council District 3. Ballots are already out, and so people are starting to fill them in. I would love to earn your vote. Reach out, contact me. If you have any questions, I would love to hear them. I think I can do a good job with the city.
Well, it's really awesome to have you on the show, and I think this is your radio debut, isn't it?
Did it sound like it?
No, not at all.
Well, thank you. Okay. Very nice of you.
But was it your radio debut?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, Congratulations. This is, Richard, it's always so interesting the first time behind a microphone. I remember the first time I was behind the microphone. I could hardly get my name out. Mm-hmm.
So you've done
really well.
All right, cool. Set the bar high.
that's for sure. So we're going to go to Jason McBride here in just a minute, but I wanted to just let you know, I wanted to talk about this and hadn't gotten to this yesterday. And Steve, that was this whole thing with the Washington Post and this title regarding the obituary for Baghdadi, who was killed the other morning. And the Washington Post, astonishingly, I thought it was a joke when somebody sent it to me this weekend, but talked about that it was a respected cleric that had passed on at the age of 48. I didn't think it was real, but it was real.
Somebody else was pressing me on that yesterday. Where did you see that? Where did that come from? It's like, it's the Washington Post, of all places.
And I really thought it had been Photoshopped.
Yeah.
And it had not been. And so my point on this, my friends, is, if you've got a newspaper, a well-respected newspaper that is really
a one-time well-respected newspaper.
If they are willing to finesse, news headline like that, I'm not sure you can trust anything that they have to say. And so that is why you need to listen to the Kim Munson Show, because we are always striving for truth.
I just wonder, the brainy, you bring up an excellent point. The brainiacs in any of these outlets realize the hole that they're digging.
Well, and we have an opportunity here, and that is the veil is off.
What do you do when your enemy's digging a hole? You hand him a shovel.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue to work towards truth, but I want to get the question on the table with Jason McBride. And that question on the table is if you can't tell me what the weather's going to be like tomorrow, how can you tell me what the temperature's going to be like in 100 years?
Good morning.
How you doing?
I wasn't sure if you were directly asking me or threatening to ask me again once you got me on the air.
Well, I am asking and threatening to ask you. How's that?
Well, it seems to me that if you kind of go back in history for the last 100 years, Kim, you can dig up old newspaper headlines that said we were heading into the next ice age. I mean, it kind of, we're going to be frozen by this year. We're going to be dead by this year. We're going to be starved to death by this year. The earth's going to catch on fire. They've just kind of rotated back around again. So there's never been any predictive power. But, I am very, very relieved that we're finally going to get answers to this. I saw last night that an Inconvenient sequel is going to be playing on Showtime or Epix or something, and Al Gore will straighten all of this out for us. So don't fear, Kim.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm going to rest easier on that. But,
yeah.
The real point here, my friends, is that we have PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that are using this issue and betting our economy and betting our future on this particular narrative. And just common sense, if you can't tell us what the weather's going to be like tomorrow, how the heck do you think you can tell me what the temperature's going to be like in 100 years? And so to that, what's going on in the market, though? Wasn't it a big day or something? I thought I saw a headline go by.
Yeah, yesterday the S&P made a new all-time high. I mean, just barely, Kim. We broke above like 3,028. The other indexes haven't got there yet. The Dow's close. The NASDAQ is very close. The small caps are running a little bit behind. But it's interesting to see, this market trying to kind of come out of this sideways pattern it's been in. If we could break above these levels, get some volume coming in, it's also that time of the year. November through May are the most productive 6 months of the year of the market. So we'll see if we can move higher. But right now, it really looks like it wants to.
Okay, Jason, just a question. Normally, doesn't the market, it's looking into the future, and it's kind of a barometer on what the market thinks is going to be happening. So it looks like the barometer of the stock market says right now that things are looking better.
Well, it does, and the market, looks 6 to 9 months ahead. I mean, this is not a market that's behaving as if it's seeing a recession coming. It's a market that's behaving. I think some headlines we've had on progress with China, it's happy about that. There's promises that the USMCA will be signed by the end of the year, which will be good for our economy. I think that is also helping, but also earnings. Not every company, but earnings are coming out a little bit better than the gloomy predictions that were out there for the third quarter. And a lot of times the fourth quarter is the strongest for earnings. So, if we can do well in the third quarter or a little bit better than expected, then that, behooves us well for the fourth quarter to be even better.
Okay. Jason, and just the care that you have in watching the market, you and your colleagues, John Buckingham, Lauren, all of your colleagues over there, You know, I know that you guys really care about each individual client, and everybody is different. Everybody has a different risk tolerance, different goals. And as we're coming into the end of the year, we've talked about these Roth IRAs. They seem like they make a lot of sense. But don't tarry, because a lot of this needs to be taken care of by the end of the year. So give you a call, and you and your colleagues over there at Presidential Wealth Management will sit down and do a discovery session and just take a look at making sure that people are moving forward on their economic well-being.
I agree. You know, Thanksgiving and Christmas will be upon us before you know it, and these things tend to get pushed aside. You know, contributing to a Roth or converting is something you have to do. Contributing, no, but converting by the end of the year, if you don't do it and you could have done it cheaply, you know, that opportunity is kind of lost forever. You don't get to go back the middle of next year and go back and convert for this year.
Okay, so people need to sit down with you, and you'll take a look at that. You don't lock the door. There's no cost. But I know that you just want the best for people. And so reach out. You can go to AIR, that's AIRpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. Or Natalie will be behind the phones at 7:30. Phone number is 303-694-1600. 303-694-1600. Jason McBride, thank you so much. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Have a great show, Kim.
Thanks so much. Richard, we've got Ben Martin on the line. We're going to talk about the Federalist Papers.
Sounds good.
I think, and you know
I'd
what?
Like to hear this.
And you know what? Where we started the very first Federalist Papers was at Water's Edge Winery right there in Centennial.
I love that place.
I do too. So let's go to break. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and let's have a conversation with Ben Martin. He is, as you know, he is a former Army Ranger. He's a patriotic historian. And this is our Federalist Papers show, and it is brought to you by the Harris family, really treasured partners of mine. And Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here, Kim.
And we're going to be talking, we're working our way through the Federalist Papers this year. And last night was the Vino and Veritas at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial. And it was great. And that is why we've been working our way through this on the show. And you're doing such a super job. But let's jump in here because we've got a lot to talk about. And I think that you wanted to talk about, let's see, was it Federalist 67 through 77, right?
That's right. That's we're talking about the executive today, the president, which is one of the most highly contested parts of the whole Constitutional Convention. There was more arguments about what the president should be and what the president, what the powers he should have and what his character should be and all that. So if we can get into that, we'll start with that. And 67 starts the thing off, and it starts an 11-essay survey. And if you look at the constitutional papers, no one specific part of government had more essays about it than the executive. If you put the legislative together, which is the House of Representatives and the Senate, you'll have more essays in it. But the founders or the framers were prudent in separating the branch of the legislature, because they figured that throughout history that had been the most powerful form of the, of any government, and that it eventually pulled all the powers into itself and overrode every other form or every other part of government. So we're looking at this now, and we start off by talking about in 67, he starts off and he kind of dispels a lot of the Federalist organizations, and he says they just they don't make any sense, and it's we really shouldn't spend a whole lot of time even talking about those arguments. And then he goes into, in 68, something that everybody has talked about a lot in present time is the Electoral College, by the means of which, you know, use that to elect the president. And he talks about that is the only part of the Constitution that was not condemned by its opponents, the anti-federalists.
Was the Electoral College. Interesting.
Yeah, the Electoral College. And so we talk about that, and he says, basically says that we do that, that we do the Electoral College as the desirable choice made by competent persons, as in the Electoral College to avoid tumult and disorder, and to avoid intrigue and corruption, and to maintain the president independent of all but the people. And so he talks about, after setting the forth the virtues of the Electoral College for electing a president, which he calls a process that affords a moral certainty that the office of the president will seldom fall to the lot of any man who is not to an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications.
You know, that is so interesting, Ben. And, you know, I just want to make a point, because a lot of people don't understand the Electoral College. So I'm going to try to make this point. Hopefully I make it correctly. But the Electoral College was put in place so that the smaller population states also had a voice in how the president was elected. And so each of the states, you know, they had two senators, and then they had a number of congressmen, and that's kind of based on population. And and so the number of electors that a state has is based on those two senators and then their congressmen. And so what it does is a little state like Wyoming, where I think they maybe only have one congressman, but they have two senators. And so that gives them a little bit more of a voice in choosing the president instead of just all the big populist states.
And that's exactly right.
Yay. All right. Okay.
And that's what he says in that, that, you know, that the people will elect competent electors. You know, they will not just, that you will get the voice of the people into that, but then that will mean that they will already have elected competent electors who will make competent choices in the president. And that's where it says that that process affords a moral certainty that the office of the president will seldom fall to a lot of any man who is not of eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications. And then we go on in this portion of the Federalist Papers, we go really to number 70, which describes those characters, those characteristics of the what should be the president that with the requisite powers, the requisite qualities, the requisite virtues. And we start with that by saying that every good government needs energy in the executive. And he says that energy in the executive is a leading character in the definition of good government. It is essential to the protection of the community against foreign attacks. It is not less essential to the steady administration of the laws, to the protection of property, and sometimes it interrupts, and sometimes to help to interrupt the ordinary course of justice, to keep from keep that from happening, and to secure the blessings of liberty against the enterprises and assaults of ambition, of faction, and of anarchy. And he says, in talking about the energetic executive, he says, a feeble executive implies a feeble execution of the government. A feeble execution is but another phrase for a bad execution, and a government ill executed or badly executed, whatever may be its theory, must in practice be a bad government.
That is so interesting. And the word energy, it doesn't mean, running, that kind of energy, but it means in a way, I think it almost means a boldness, but yet it has to be within the constraints of what you were just talking about, with the,
right.
the focus of the, of the Constitution.
It has to be, yeah. When he talks about that, it talks about the powers that it must have, the ingredients which constitute energy in the government, and it lists four specific ingredients, and it talks about all of them, but they are unity in the executive. In other words, you can't have a council of executives. You have to have unity. And some of the states, especially Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, had demanded or pushed for a council of executives rather than having a governor of a state. And so they were looking for a council the same way in the national government. So that's the first one. The second ingredient was duration of the executive. You mean mm-hmm. how many years is he going to have in power? And then the third one was, and we'll talk about all these, an adequate provision for the support of the executive. And finally, the fourth one, and the one that is talked about most, is the competent powers, because that's where the energy comes from, the competent powers. And we'll talk about all those in there. And these ingredients, which constitute safety in the Republican sense, are a due dependence on the people and a due responsibility. And you can remember from the last time we talked and the first time we talked about the Federalist Papers, I talked about responsibility being an American word, a word that was first used and defined by its use by the framers of our Constitution. Even though it had been claimed by the British by Edmund Burke, who first used those words in, I think it was 1792 or 1794. I can't remember, but it was in the 1790s. And that was the claim that they were the ones that founded that. And we go back and we look at the Federalist Papers and we see that our framers used it over and over again. And okay. Responsibility was a big split between the Federalist and the non-Federalist. You have to look at the terms of what responsibility means in the Latin form. And it has two meanings. The first one, responso, which means response to the people. But if you go even deeper than that, spondeo, which is in there too, means a sacred oath to the people. And so the Federalists believed that that was the true meaning of responsibility, that you were responsive to the people, but you were also responsible for a sacred oath. And then the anti-federalists believed that the only thing the government was supposed to do was be responsible or responsive to the people. And they throw out that other part, which we talk about as liberty, being the responsible exercise of those powers, of freedom. And so that is a big difference between the Federalist and the non-Federalist when we start into the argument. And so when we're talking about the executive, we're talking about responsibility to the people, that's the true meaning of the dependence. You have two things, the dependence on the people and the due responsibility to the people. So,
and also to the oath of the Constitution, though, right?
What's that?
Also the sacred oath to the Constitution as well by the executive.
That's exactly right, the sacred oath to the Constitution. And if we go back to what we talked about last time when we talked about that, we talked about how that sacred oath was so important to legislators.
Ben, let's stop right there. We need to take a quick break, but I wanted to make two comments, and then we're going to come back. We only have one more segment. You know it always goes so fast with you, Ben Martin.
Yes, it does.
But to that point, Richard Holt is in studio. He is running for Centennial City Council. And, Richard, one of the things when I was on City Council, we actually swore to the Constitution. And I think that that's really important that we all remember, even, when we're on the local level, that we are swearing to uphold the Constitution. The other thing is, and Ben, you mentioned this, is responso, or responsibility. And right. We were talking about the executive, but we as Americans have a responsibility as well. Now, first of all, we have a sacred right the sacred duty, maybe. I don't know what the word is. The sacred thing that we get to do is to vote. But,
correct.
But if we're
sacred
going...
Sacred responsibility, yes.
It's a sacred responsibility. And so we, as voters, we need to make sure that we have our brains around these issues and also to research our candidates. And if you don't take the time to do it, then I think you have a responsibility not to vote, because you need to make sure that you know what you're voting about. And Richard, you want to make a quick comment on that?
You know, if I can chime in, I'm finding out that only 30% of the people who are eligible to vote are going to actually vote in this municipal election. And that's a really, really low number.
But it's a responsibility to know what's going on.
Absolutely.
And I would venture to say that the other 70% are not voting because they haven't taken time to, know the issues. They just aren't voting. And so we have this sacred responsibility. And I think that we need to take it more seriously. And Ben Martin, that's one of the reasons why we do this important show. I love having you on the Federalist Papers, brought to you by the Harris family. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, let's jump into these unity, duration, the provision for support, and what was the last one? It was complete power.
The last one was competent power.
Competent power. I couldn't read my own writing. So, okay, this is Kim Munson. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Greenwood Village, Tina Francone with Straightforward Shooting, and Grand Lake U.S. Constitution Week for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. We are having a conversation with Ben Martin. He is a former Army Ranger, patriotic historian, expert on the Federalist Papers, and this is our Federalist Papers show brought to you by the Harris family. Thank you to them. Let's jump in here, Ben. We've got about 8 minutes. It's going by too quickly. So where do we want to go on this?
Well, the first thing I want to say is I want to make a comment on what happened right before we closed, and that was about the low voter participation. And I have to say something that I think part of that reason why we have low voter participation is most people are displeasured or displeased or sometimes disgusted with the political choices we have. And that is a responsibility on the people that are running for office. Most of the people that I talk to that are running for office have no idea about the Constitution. And as you said, even elected officials at the local area are sworn to the Constitution, to a dependence, to a responsibility to uphold the Constitution, to protect and defend it. And that is not happening with most people today. And we talked about that when we were talking about the legislative branch in number 57, when it's a very important, I think, quote, to me at least, the aim of every political constitution is or ought to be, first, to obtain for rulers men who possess the most wisdom to discern and the most virtue to pursue the common good of the society. We have such a partisan group of people right now that don't really understand the Constitution, don't understand that the two main points of the Constitution, our Constitution at every level, is to first protect the rights of the individual, but second, to support the public good. And that doesn't mean the good of your constituencies only. It means the public good of the whole union, the whole nation. And that is not, first of all, they don't understand the Constitution that they're supposed to support and defend. And the second thing is that they do not have the virtue that is necessary, and that is required in a Republican form of government. And it says that that is most presumed in a Republican constitution, that this will be prominent in those people that they elect. So okay. That is, we have both somewhat of an apathy, but also a displeasure or disgust in the voters. But we also have a lack of wisdom, which they talk about wisdom in that quote in 57, and a lack of virtue in the people that are running for office. It's a dual responsibility from both of us.
Well, it is. And you know what? I have a feeling what we're going to need to do, Ben, is maybe double up next month, because I don't think, now that you've put that on the table, I want to address something. This becomes more conversational. So let's, and I did want to talk about impeachment as well, but I just want to make a comment. You know, when I was on city council in Lone Tree, I was just really kind of getting my brain around all these things, but I knew that I'd taken this oath to the Constitution. And, you know, one of the interesting stories, and they are now a sponsor of mine, and that is Hooters Restaurants. Although I waited for a couple of years before we even had a talk about them, and I was off of council for a couple of years before I even talked with them about being a sponsor, because I never want anything to look like it's inappropriate, you know, a quid pro quo or whatever the word is. Something just happened one night on city council, and I never even dreamed that it was going to happen, but it did. And that was, Hooters Restaurants was coming before the council. One of the things that we did was we approved liquor licenses. And there was a building that had been a TGI Fridays, and they had closed down. So that location had a restaurant. It had had a liquor license. It was zoned for a restaurant, and Hooters Restaurants wanted to come in and put their restaurant in. And there was primarily, I would say, well, there were people that came forward for that city council meeting. It was standing room only, saying that we don't want this business here because we don't like the way the uniforms look, and so we ask that you not approve this liquor license.
Yeah, and I attended that meeting.
You were there, weren't you? Thank you.
Yep.
And it was standing room only, and I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, now, wait a minute. Legitimate businesses have the right to be able to compete in the free market, and it's not right for people to come in and say, we don't like you, we don't like you, and so we won't let you be in business. But over here, for example, we talked about the corporate welfare, we're going to give you a deal, but not the other person. And and so I made the motion to bring the issue to a vote, and there was no second by other council members. And I wanted to address just the whole freedom issue on that, and was not able to do that from the dais. And it died. There was no second. And I went home, and I was so frustrated because I felt this was such a freedom issue. You know, it's not right for city council. So I was talking to a young person, and she said, your job is to do what the people of Lone Tree want you to do. And
that's an anti-federalist point of view, the federalist point of view.
And I said, within context, as long as we are not stomping all over the rights of over the vision of the Declaration, that all men are created equal, and they have this right of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and also that government is adhering to the Constitution, then yes, I am to do the will of the people. But if the will of the people is that we are going to stomp all over property rights and other people's ability to go after life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, then I have to take a stand on that. And so we issued a press release. Facebook blew up for 2 weeks about the proper role of government. And ultimately, the city attorney said, you guys don't have a leg to stand on. It was approved. But it was just a really interesting whole thing on freedom. And so we only got 2 minutes. I know you were at the meeting. And, oh, Richard, did you want to say something?
No, and for what it's worth, the Cajun wings are delicious.
There you go. So, Ben Martin, we've got 2 minutes, and then I'm going to have you back to continue on this presidency thing, because you were there that night. So tell me what you think.
Well, I think, like what you said, Kim, I think, and that's what that's what is said in the sixth article of our Constitution, and it says that every level of office has to maintain or has to take this oath of allegiance and oath of support to our Constitution, no matter what level of government you are at in the American government. And that's the point, is that you were supposed to be responsive to the people that you represent. But the big purpose of government, of legislature, was to refine and broaden the people's interest. You know, you weren't just supposed to take that, but you were supposed to say, okay, you were supposed to refine it, and then you were supposed to broaden it so that it also served the public welfare or the welfare of the whole good. And that's what you were doing, not just responding to the people. As it says in the Federalist Papers, the reason of the people alone will control the government. The government is there to control the passions of the people.
Oh, my gosh. So fascinating. Ben, this has gone too quickly. So let's get you scheduled so that we can continue this conversation on the presidency. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed it, Kim. Thank you so much.
And Richard Holt, thank you so much for being in studio.
And thank you, Kim. This is a heck of a lot of fun.
It is. It goes fast, doesn't it?
It really does.
Okay, John Jay, he said, no power on earth has a right to take our property from us without our consent. He says, those who own the country ought to govern it. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Like a new moon rising fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.